Hello, this is Phyllis Furumoto with Reiki Balancing Form and Essence. Well, let Reiki teach you. This is the theme for our shows this month, and I've really enjoyed the scope of what people have shared with us so far. And today I have with me Fran Freeman. She lives in Massachusetts in the United States. I've known Fran for quite a long number of years. And she's been through what we would call the ups and downs of life with Reiki, and as we all have. And it'll be very interesting to see what she's learned in her Reiki life. Fran, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you for inviting me. It's wonderful to be here and be able to have a conversation with you.
Oh, you're welcome. I'm glad, and I know that you've been on the show before, but I'd like for you to just share with us how you came to meet Reiki and a little bit of your Reiki story.
Okay. In the late 70s, I became aware of the fact that I wanted to learn how to do healing, how to do healing work. And when I moved to Oregon. I was living in Massachusetts at the time, and I moved to Oregon. And my husband, Don, found therapeutic touch, and so I tried that and really enjoyed it. And then there were a number of other healing modalities that I explored. I was living in Eugene, Oregon at the time, and it was a time when there was an explosion of all kinds of things that were coming from the East. And Don and I were married in 1980, and he became ill that very year. In 1982, his illness was really serious, and a woman in Oregon, in Eugene, named Marta Getty, came to the hospital, the Sacred Heart Hospital, and started to do treatments on him. And at that time, we weren't sure whether or not Don was going to make it. And the work that she was doing was Reiki. So I watched what she was doing and asked her if I could learn to do that so I could also do treatments on Don. So Marta taught me first degree, and I began to treat Don. And at that time, my concept about healing was mixed up with the concept of cure. And I've since learned that healing and cure are very different things. So Don did recover, and of course he's still with us. But the illness that I wanted Reiki to cure didn't cure him. However, since that time, I've really come to understand the different dynamics of those two ways of viewing what healing is.
Can you take a little, maybe we'll divert a little bit from your story.
Sure.
Can you say more about that? For you, what you've learned about healing and then what you've learned about curing?
Well, another example, my mother in 93 was diagnosed with a lung cancer, and mm-hmm. it was serious. It was very, and I left my work. I was living in Florida at the time, and I left my work and moved into her home and began to treat her. And I treated her for many months. And at that time, my hope was that Reiki would cure the cancer. But what I found was that Reiki healed her life. I really felt that at the moment that I began this process with her, nothing in her life was really settled, you know, wills and property and all those kinds of things. And over the course of months, she became more and more peaceful and was able to manage all of the things she needed to manage. And when it was time for her to pass, she was at total peace. So while I was disappointed, of course, in that that Reiki didn't keep her here. I was also really grateful that she had such a peaceful way of leaving.
And I suppose that there was a, you know, I don't know, a blessing for you that you were able to assist her and somehow, you know, not be helpless in her, in the situation.
Oh, it was amazing. It was really wonderful. She didn't like heat. So what I do is rub her back until she'd fall asleep, and then I could do Reiki on her. And I tell this to my students too, that with Reiki, I never feel helpless in a situation, because there's always something that I can do. I can send a distant treatment. I can put my hands on. I've been with other people who've been at their time of passing or who've been going through this process. And it is such a blessing, such a gift to have this, to be able to share and to offer, because I've been in other situations before Reiki where I stood, for example, when Don was ill, before I learned it, I stood there feeling helpless, that there wasn't anything that I could do. So Reiki has been an incredible gift in that way.
Beautiful. And so back to healing and curing. So do you have a way of definition or description of both of them?
Well, I think curing is, when I think about curing, I think about it in terms of, it's a very linear, concrete thing. I have a broken wrist and I put my hands on and I want that to be cured. With healing, I think it's a much more, the spectrum is much broader. I think it encompasses, all aspects of our being. And so with the example with my mother, I think it encompassed, not only, healing, but it helped her with her, personal growth towards, the place that she needed to be at when it was time for her to leave. It was time for her to pass. So those are, I see healing as much more all encompassing than curing. Curing is like a specific disease, a specific thing, but healing is the umbrella.
Well, it's interesting that we find in our Reiki lives that Reiki seems to be able to assist people in both of those, healing and curing, not necessarily at the same time. No, fascinating.
I think for me, the lesson was not to be so focused on the cure. And to appreciate and trust that what happens with this process and with this use of, with Reiki is what's supposed to happen, and accepting that. And that's one of the lessons. One from Reiki itself is, letting go of that sense of needing to control something. This might come as a surprise to you, Phyllis, but I think I have an ego.
Really?
Yeah.
Good. That's very good. You don't want to be without an ego.
Somewhere along the way. And that piece and that part of me that wants to control or work on or change the dynamics or whatever is happening in a given situation. So in a gentle way, Reiki has been teaching me to release that need to control and to let go of my ego, really, in a given situation, and to let go of the resistance.
That's
I think
beautiful.
the important thing I was thinking about this topic is, of let Reiki teach you is let, is allow it to happen.
Hey, that's a very good point.
Yeah. So it's been for me to surrender, not in the sense of giving up or giving in, but again, letting go and allowing and seeing what Reiki has to offer and where it can take a given situation or how it can affect what a person needs.
Well, I find it so fascinating that in our experience with Reiki, there's a kind of I don't know what the word is. There's some word that means giving human attributes to something that's not human, you know, people say that Reiki is intelligent. And so will give us what we need, not necessarily what we want. And I find that to be true because mostly what I want is something that may not even serve me. I just want it because, you know, because I do. So, when I talk about, Reiki not being intelligent, it's because I find that Reiki is it allows the natural process to happen, and we're so unused, I think, to having the natural process be evident in our lives that we find that to be intelligent, when really it's actually simply allowing nature to take its course. And we as human beings disrupt nature so much these days that we have no idea what the natural course is. So even though we can say that, of course, one of the things we all have in common is that we all die. Well, somehow, right up to the end, it just feels like that there's this idea that we can actually control when we die. And how we die. And in some way, that's true by, you know, preparation or by healing or whatever, but it feels as though this healing and curing process that happens in Reiki is so profound that it goes beyond intelligence for me.
I agree. You know, while we're talking, I'm looking out the window at some beautiful trees which are growing nice needles and leaves and just appreciating. And that's one of the things that another thing that Reiki has taught me is to deeply appreciate what's in nature and that connection with nature, but seeing the new growth, it's like nobody directed that and no person said, okay, tree, grow now. Or the ones that are, you know, I'm looking at a tree that is gone and nobody said, okay, it's time for you to go. Yeah. So,
right.
Yeah.
Right. Well, it's one of the things that I really appreciate about Reiki is that it brings me into more of my own personal process, you know, my own personal natural evolution. And I feel that that's something that's so, I don't know, congruent to our beings as human beings, our natural bodies, that it feels so different. It makes our lives rich and entertaining and at the same time very profound. And I'm wondering, in talking about this piece about profundity, I'm wondering, what can you share with us your motivation of what brought you to looking for healing? That intrigued me when you said that, you know, at some point in your life you decided that this is something that you wanted to explore. And I never had that idea, so I'm just wondering how that came to you.
Oh, well, earlier in my life, I had an aunt who was gifted in some ways that I don't know if I can quite describe. And she talked about how this nurse had come and done some work with her. And I think what she had done was therapeutic touch. So it was the first time that some healing work. So it was the first time that I ever heard that that was a possibility. And it never occurred to me that that could become something I would do. And then later in the 70s, I had a group of friends and we had a really beautiful spiritual connection. And then the subject of healing was brought up and I guess they just kind of filed it away somewhere. And there was a moment in 1978 when I was working with handicapped children and I had my hands on this boy who had Down syndrome and he could not communicate. And I just was so moved. I can still see the scene. The sun was coming through the window and I had my hands on him and wished at that moment that there was something that I could do for him that would assist him because he had such agony and no way to communicate what that was. And I had no way of assisting him other than, you know, to do the basic daily needs and, you know, be a supportive person in his life. But so that was like the moment I became consciously aware that I wanted to learn how to do healing work. And shortly after that, I moved to Oregon and met Don, and it went on from there.
Wow. That's beautiful. That's a wonderful story of following your natural urges and what has come to you. That's beautiful.
Thank you.
Yeah. So on with your Reiki story. We took a bit of a diversion.
Okay. So,
let's see, do you remember where you were in your story?
Let's see. So Marta taught me first degree. And I loved Reiki and had this conversation with Marta because at the time I was learning acupressure and polarity therapy and I was doing yoga and therapeutic touch and I was doing all these things. I know. It was just so, you know, and Marta shared with me that she loved going to Australia to teach Reiki. I believe she was one of the first people to do that. But anyways, she said she would go there and teach first degree. And when she went back, people were so appreciative of Reiki. They practiced and practiced. And when she went back, they were ready for second degree, for the next level. And she said what she'd noticed in our area, in the Eugene area, was that people were collecting healing forms like charms on a bracelet. And that just struck me. She wasn't saying it as a criticism, but just an observation. And I began more and more practicing of Reiki. And as I practiced, I found that those other forms just kind of, although they were aware, I was aware of them and occasionally would use them, they just kind of slipped away from my practice. And I realized afterwards that one of the reasons was if I was doing an acupressure treatment on somebody, then I would have to decide what that person needed. So I'd have to think, okay, what meridian and what points and this. And it was very, for me, it was cognitive. And so were the others. But Reiki wasn't. I could simply place my hands on and trust that the energy would go where it needed to go. So that's one of the reasons why the other forms just seem to drift away. although I still maintain some knowledge of them, and I think they're all wonderful practices. They simply weren't my path. And so that was another one of the teachings that began with that one statement that Marta made.
Mm-hmm. So can you talk about what it means to you to say that Reiki is your path? I think we say this all the time.
And yeah.
I think it would be interesting. I'd be interested to know what that means for you.
Well, let me see. One story comes to mind, and that is, I was at a certain point. early on in my teaching and practice of Reiki, I wasn't getting students, and I was feeling discouraged about a lot of things. There were a lot of things that weren't happening right. And so I decided that I would just go out and take a walk. And I thought, I don't know, should I stay with Reiki? Should I do this? Should I do that? And then, of course, there was a part of me that was feeling like, oh, I shouldn't be even thinking these things, you know, feeling like I'm disloyal or something.
Right.
So I was doing this personal exploration of where am I with this healing practice and should I stay with it? So I went outside and I started going for this little walk, and this woman drove down the street and she stopped her car, and she's someone I had taught first degree to. And she said, "Hi, Fran, are you still teaching Reiki?" Now, I'd never seen her on my street before. You know, this is a little country road. And I said, "Yeah." She said, "Because I'm interested in learning second degree." So I feel like I keep being, that was my answer, you know, I keep being called back to Reiki, to have it be the way that I share my spirituality,
mm-hmm.
the way that I share about healing. It's just so much a part of my life that I can't imagine living my life without it and without offering it to myself or to other people in some form. Now, it may be that there are times that I've taught a great deal and times that I don't teach a lot, times that I need to go back and be with myself with Reiki, and times that I can be out and practicing with a lot of people and teaching and doing a lot of treatments. And I've seen this kind of ebb and flow, and that's another teaching of accepting where I am with it, but that it's always there and it's always a part of my life and my living.
Yeah. Beautiful.
So one of the other things that Reiki has taught me is to trust my intuition. I'm by nature an introvert.
Really?
It takes a lot of effort for me to express my ideas publicly. So Reiki has given me a stronger sense of trusting those intuitions enough to not only have them for myself, but to share them outside of myself. So, back to the story. So the next year I went to MARTA and wanted to learn second degree. That was in 1983, and I learned second degree from her. And then I moved to North Carolina in 1984, and she moved to Italy, and we lost contact with each other. And I knew at that time that I wanted to become a Reiki master. And I remember having a conversation with her about it. And I tried to contact her in Italy, and I wasn't able to. Some man answered her phone and spoke Italian. And I don't know if she ever got the message. So during the time that we'd had this conversation, she said, well, I think, and this was in 83. She felt that if someone wanted to become a Reiki master, that they should be trained and initiated by you. And when she said that, there was this little leap that happened inside me, you know, in my heart. And it just always was there. And over the course of the next 10 years, because I wanted not only to be able to do treatments, but I wanted to be able to share Reiki with people and teach them how to use this and do it, I did try many different ways of trying to become a Reiki master. And I wasn't even aware of the fact, because I was at that point kind of isolated in my practice. I was in North Carolina and didn't know anyone else there, and then moved to Florida and didn't know any Reiki masters there. But I went through all these different ways of trying to become a master, and none of them ever happened, and probably even the using the words become a master are, is a misnomer, but be initiated as a master. And then I made a connection with you, and then in 1993 had this beautiful experience. So, but that's, I know, it's just, you know, like I always, I think the moment she said that, it was in my heart and it was my intuition. It was my intention. And it simply, I had to explore the things maybe to know that it all unfolded the way it should.
Yeah. Amazing. Well, I think the interesting thing when you said to be, I tried all the different ways to become a master. And I think that that's actually more accurate, in my opinion, about the path of mastery and the path of Reiki, because, you know, there's this really interesting idea about a Reiki master. Like, for me, it's about, there are lots of people who practice Reiki right now who are masters, but they're not initiated. Because they've practiced Reiki for many, many years. They've integrated it into their lives. They're totally committed to the practice in many, many different levels, on many, many different levels. It's the first thing they think about if somebody comes to them with an issue in their lives. And it's where they go when there's an issue in their lives. So for me, the initiation of a master completes a personal process of a path. Mm-hmm. So I feel like those 10 years were definitely not wasted, but, but, provided you with a lot of, shall we say, grist for the mill, and that you were able to do a lot of preparation, on the road, as it were. And, you know, in the early days when I was initiating masters, I used to really believe that I made people masters. And then I just got it that that was not accurate, that it was not accurate in my experience, that the initiation definitely, though it may have come to some people a bit premature, it was the person who developed mastery, and the initiation was like a public confirmation of recognition, which is not to say that it isn't powerful or makes a difference, but there is something to be said about the environment in which the initiation occurs. And if the environment is nourished and lush and the soil is prepared, so to speak, then the seed falls and grows very rapidly. And when there is no preparation, the seed can die. Not that you never are a master, but that there's no nutrient, and the growth is a lot slower and sometimes convoluted.
Very nice.
Yeah. So I really like this in connection with this, conversation that we had about path, that for me, what I realized after about a year and a half of wondering whether I wanted to be a Reiki master and was already initiated, was realizing that I was a master and that I had made all my decisions in relationship to Reiki. And I realized that that for me was a sign that I was on the path. Yeah, so that's really interesting, because I feel my mother used to call me a lost soul, and I was really resentful of it, of course, because I was a lost soul. I mean, I didn't have a touchstone in my life, and Reiki has become that touchstone. And once I had that, I never could be lost. As you said, you never can be helpless anymore. Because you have Reiki.
Exactly. So, yeah. Thank you.
Yeah. So sure. It is the same for me with helplessness, but it also is the same for me with feeling lost, like if I find myself feeling lost, then I go back to Reiki.
That was one of the ideas that came, you know, one of the awarenesses, I should say, that came to me, because I find that it's easy to get caught up in a situation and be and feel lost in the middle of something and think that there's nowhere to turn, and then to realize there's always help with Reiki. And what I found, you mentioned early on that there have been a little few ups and downs in my life.
Right.
And the times when I was just a couple, the times that I was in a really difficult situation, I found that I needed help from other people. I needed to call and ask for other people to do distant treatments and to assist me with Reiki. So it was another lesson that for me, that it's not only is it okay, but it's important to ask when you need to have help, and to know that there are other people there that will assist you. So it was another whole, there was a period of time when I could do treatments on myself, and I needed a lot more. And then I received support from the community.
What does that feel like? I don't know if you can describe it.
When the community supports you with Reiki?
Yeah.
Oh. It is difficult to describe. It's like being surrounded, encompassed in, with a sense of love around you. Like a healing blanket of love surrounds you. At least that was, my perception of it, that I wasn't alone and I didn't have to, think about, no, think about isn't the right word. Isn't the right way to phrase it. At the time that I did ask for this help, one time when I asked for help from the community, you know, they said there's light at the end of the tunnel. I couldn't see the tunnel. The tunnel wasn't there. It was just all dark. And what happened with the support I received from the community is that the lights started coming back on again, and I could see my way. I could see that I could make it through this difficult time in this difficult place, and that I was going to be okay. I was going to come through it. So it was a feeling of support, of care, and of deep appreciation and gratitude that there are people on this planet who will reach out and do this for someone else. Mm-hmm. And they would do that for me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Beautiful. Well, as you are describing this, I'm just going back to one of my recent learnings through Reiki, which hasn't really come to a conclusion, actually. And that is my difficulty in trying to understand what the benefit is for my sending Reiki to, for instance, the firefighters in Arizona fighting this big fire right now. Mm. And I guess, you know, when you think about people who are in a kind of emergency situation where you might feel alone or left or not supported or wanting more support than, you know, you could have, but that support is actually a kind of spiritual support, then maybe sending Reiki to people who are having to evacuate their homes and having maybe lost their homes to the fire and so on, would be something that we could do as a kind of humanitarian gesture. So I don't like the word gesture, but I'm struggling, you can tell. So I'm wondering if you have any thoughts about this in your Reiki practice, this whole piece of the practice that a lot of people are very devoted to, where they send Reiki to different emergency situations.
Do you have a feeling about that?
I mean, it's one of my great questions these days.
Yeah. Well, I think in the process of doing a distant treatment, you know, there's the part where we can check in and see if this, you know, see if it's okay. I think that's a part of the intuition of the person, or maybe part of the, I'm struggling myself here with that. I think if a person feels called to do that, then there's something moving inside them that directs them. If they're doing it from a place of, depending upon, I guess, what their motivation is. If their motivation is not personal, but simply humanitarian and a humanitarian effort, a way of connecting with other humans and sharing a gift with other humans, then, and checking on some level within themselves to know that this is, okay to be received.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. I don't know if that answers your question very well.
No, yes and no. I'm more wondering about your own experience and if you do this or not. And because I realize that your description of how you received the assistance from the community was really beautiful. And I'm wondering, I can imagine that people, you know, who were involved in the earthquake in Japan or the people who are now involved in the fire here in Arizona or other, you know, kind of, what should I say?
Disasters.
I don't like the word disasters. Okay. Emergency situations.
Okay.
How they might feel and how Reiki might be able to connect it spiritually with them and give them some hope, I think.
It hasn't been my practice to do distant treatments on a situation that's a whole big situation, but I've heard from other masters that they have, and that was learning for me that, you know, holding back a giant wave or the different things that could happen as a result of that. So I haven't incorporated that. I've been very specific in responding to situations where it's been much more individual with community and,
interesting.
Yeah. And that was my understanding that this was a way to practice because then a person has asked for assistance, like I asked the community.
Right.
So I don't know how that dynamic fits in with, the request, although, you know, you can see people on television saying, please help us. So that can be considered a request. I'm thinking about it now.
Right.
You know.
Right. Well, it's a very interesting dilemma for me, and I'm just in the search for it. So thank you for your sharing. And I appreciate, you know, your thinking. It's also mine to a certain extent. And I find that I just keep looking for what I'm missing, I guess, and wanting to make sure that I'm not limiting my own practice.
Exactly, yeah.
You know what I mean? So that's kind of why I'm in this situation. So Reiki is teaching me, I'm not sure what. It's I'm on the path. So what are your other do you have other things that you wanted to share about your Reiki life in response to the topic, Fred?
Well, what I've found there's that I've learned, Reiki has taught me on all different levels, emotional and physical and mental and spiritual. And one of them is, I think I might have mentioned earlier, trying to let go of situations. That's a big one for me. I used to think that the world had to be perfect around me, and that was really my concept, in that I needed to do as much as I could to make that happen. And so I'm learning, and Reiki is teaching me to accept what's happening and learning to release and not try to change things because I think I have a better plan. And partly.
I mean, it's amusing because I totally see myself.
So that's a tricky one, but it's also very freeing. When I see relationships between people that I'm close to, or amongst people I'm close to that need, where I feel like I should jump in and help, I don't. And I used to think that, I thought, well, that's not good. I should jump in and try to take care of. And what I found is that that's the last thing I should do. I have to honor where they're at. And honor is such an amazing word to me. And I feel that it's no accident that Reiki came through a culture where honor is a part of the culture. It's taught me to be mindful about how I respond to people, to honor people of all people, regardless of their country of origin, their belief system. And of course, I'm still a work in progress, but basically that sense of honoring the teachings of Reiki, all the pieces of it, and being mindful. I'm kind of skipping around here a little bit, but it all feels like it's together, especially to be mindful of how I respond to people, and knowing that this energy comes with a responsibility that I need to be aware of all my interactions. And that, again, that whole piece about control. There's things that I can't control, the things that are outside of me, but I can work on and control my response to them. And so I've been carrying this piece of personal responsibility and how I either react or respond to people in a given situation. And it's an important one for me to continue to hold and to grow with.
So, can we kind of go a little deeper into the word or into the concept of honor? I know that for a lot of us, including myself, it's been a really deep learning, and part of it has to do with, as you said, realizing that your plan may not be the best, or actually, there's some plan, but it's not yours, so to speak. And there's an interesting thing that happens. It's like a lot of people, including myself, at first feel like when you honor someone, it means you agree with them, or you would do exactly what they do. And that's not necessarily true, do you think?
Interesting. Now that you mention it. Yeah, and I think that I've had that confusion that honor is, interesting.
Because it's really about allowing people to be themselves and
Mm-hmm.
to accept them just how they are, and to accept yourself how you are, and then be able to hold both of those beings with equal respect. And that for me is on how to honor someone.
And it's a it, it in terms of I think it's easier to, personally, it's easier for me to honor someone else than it is myself sometimes. That's, I think I find that more challenging to honor all the pieces of myself, because I know more about me than maybe I know about other people.
Uh-huh.
Or maybe I have more judgments about myself. I don't know. But yeah.
However, yeah. They say, I mean, I use they with a capital T. They say that you can't, that the depth of love that you offer someone comes from the depth of love that you have for yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And the depth of honor that you have to offer someone comes from the depth of honor that you have for yourself. So in working with our ability to accept ourselves through Reiki and through our practice, then we are able to accept others in the same way.
Mm-hmm.
I always go back to my little biblical sayings, which I learned as a kid, you know, like, do unto others as you would have them do unto you. And, you know, if you take this and kind of stretch it, you can fit a lot of situations. And this is one of them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I'm still learning about honor, and I'm still learning about how to be in that place of honor. And certainly daily Reiki treatments help, and certainly sending treatments to myself when I'm in trouble and can't honor somebody else.
Uh-huh.
And so on. Those are all the places that I can use Reiki.
Mm-hmm.
And it teaches me how to be.
The latest awareness that I had was from when I was just at the retreat and with the Reiki Alliance. And there was a way that the staff at the hotel where we were staying treated us that really expressed a sense of dignity. And I realized that in learning to honor myself, part of that is to carry and to appreciate that is to carry myself with dignity and to connect with that, not simply to walk out the door and feel like you have dignity, but to connect with that every moment. Another way of honoring.
Beautiful. Beautiful. Can you describe a little bit more about how the staff treated you? Like,
they were very kind. I was a woman in Italy who loves pasta. So I was, first of all, in Sicily, you know, I was already in heaven. And little things like the waiter would come over with these two big servings of pasta and say, "Lady, which would you like?" And I couldn't decide. So then he would say, "Well, why don't you have both?" It was just a little thing, but it made me feel like, you know, he wasn't just going, "Okay, what do you want?" You know, there was always this sense of care about what they were doing.
Uh-huh.
And at one point I was walking into the dining room and the head waiter took my arm. He was this big tall man and he was wearing this pale yellow jacket and he took my arm and he started going, "Dun, dun, da, da, dun, da, da." Uh-huh. It was just a, you know, like a nice way of saying you're a wonderful woman, you know, so I really appreciated that, that way that the staff treated me with just appreciating me as a 65-year-old person who, you know, wouldn't make it on the cover of a magazine, let's just say, you know. So that was just a little sample of, and I ate a lot of pasta. It was awesome.
So I just like to go back and rewind a little bit and to the description of yourself as a 65-year-old woman who, and I won't repeat what you said, I'd like for you to, just in honoring yourself, I'd like for you to rephrase that.
Okay. I'm a 65-year-old woman, and I am actually really joyful that I'm still here and that I've experienced 65 years on this planet and appreciating where I am. And are there things that I would like to change?
What?
Yeah, and I have the power to change them, to improve my health, to have more exercise in my life, and just generally to be in a healthier state. And sometimes I see people who are struggling to walk, or in a wheelchair, and I think, Fran, you have two legs. Move. So, do it now. Take care of yourself now. So those are things that I would, those are personal goals that I have. And that's a way that I can honor this physical, carriage that, I have on the planet. Yeah.
Okay, great. Well, we can see that we are all, as they say, a work in progress. We've had our lessons. We continue to still have them in our learning field, and we take on new ones, new lessons, and these are always present on our path, and they seem to build on each other. That's what I'm also getting from what you've shared with us today, that there is a cumulative effect about all the lessons that we learn through Reiki. So I'm wondering, Fran, that we're about at the end of our time together. Is there something that you would like to say just in general about your path of Reiki?
Well, I don't know if I would be here if I hadn't met Reiki when I did. And it's been an incredible, it's been a wonderful journey. And Reiki has carried me to so many places in the world that I never would have been. It has opened my life to people of cultures all around the world. It's beyond what I can describe, the gifts that I received back from Reiki, and that it's a dynamic that I can give and without expecting it, receive.
Oh, beautiful. Well, thank you, Fran, for
Yeah,
being with us
that's
today, for sharing your path, and for stimulating our our thoughts about different qualities that Reiki brings into our lives.
Thank you, Phyllis.
Thank you. This is Phyllis Rumoto with Reiki, Balancing Form and Essence.